This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs once again on the Wells Tech podcast for Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. This is episode 368, Wells Tech's show about technology, ministry, where those two intersect, and helping me kind of traverse those waters each and every week from beautiful, lovely, probably not sunny or warm, New Ulm, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you today. And no, it's not sunny or warm. It's very blowing snow outside kind of weather. But
sounds like typical Minnesota.
Winter's here. That's right. That's okay. I'm at lovely Martin Luther College. Happy to be here, coming to you each week from our Synod's College of Ministry, where future pastors and teachers are trained. And not only that, not only do we have future pastors and teachers on campus working toward their undergraduate degree, but we have a very significant and growing population of online learners working toward continuing education and graduate study credits. And that's what we want to focus on today.
Yep. So not only do we have one New Ulmer on the show, we have two New Ulmers on the show, Dr. John Meyer. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's actually, Sally said it was a cold day, but it's warmer today than it has been the last few days. We were up to 19 degrees earlier, so that's a heat wave.
Almost up to that magical 20-degree mark. John is our Synod's, our Martin Luther College's Director of Graduate Studies and Continuing Education. John, tell us a little bit about your background. You haven't been on the show before, so let our audience know a little bit about who you are and your responsibilities there as the director.
Well, I've spent 21 years in our Lutheran elementary schools before coming to Martin Luther College. All the time I was serving as principal and as teacher, so I know what it's like to be in a small Wells school to a large Wells school. Was called to serve here in 2008, and I studied for 2 years full-time at the University of Minnesota so that I could have the right degree that I needed to fill this position of Director of Graduate Studies. And since that time, I've taken on the Director of Continuing Education as well. And I do Synod certification work, too, so I work for the Conference of Presidents, and I help them certify teachers.
Okay.
So there are a lot of hats to wear, but it's a great joy.
So what's the distinction between graduate studies and continuing ed?
That's a really good question, and a lot of people have that question. Graduate studies refers specifically to any type of coursework that leads to a degree. So if I'm not in a graduate degree program, like a Master of Science in Education that we offer here, and I'm just taking a course, and it made it for, growing in my ministry, whether it be a graduate course or an undergraduate type course, it would be considered continuing education. Continuing education could be anything from a webinar to a one credit course to a three credit course, but it's not in pursuit of a degree.
Right. And I would assume over your time there, you've seen an evolution of the delivery model of that education from a on-campus or satellite model, which I'm sure still goes on, to an online or digital model, right?
Well, that's for sure. They were already well into the online delivery when I arrived here on campus. Their graduate program was almost entirely online when I came here. It's all entirely online now. Between the graduate program and other continuing ed offerings, almost all of what we do is online. We do offer satellite courses that we bring to various areas. It's in a face-to-face format, but the the majority of the people that we serve come to us through an online format. On campus, every year we have fewer and fewer people that come to campus to study. I think last year we were in the 30s number of people who actually came here.
Okay. And, you know, I can go back a little ways with this whole delivery of continuing ed, Senate certification kind of courses. I took some courses back in early 2000, and they were actually correspondence courses. I got out paper and pencil and wrote the answers to the questions that were being posed to me, and they would mail me tests, and I would have to get a proctor and take the test and mail them back in to be graded, that kind of thing. So now the delivery mechanism for MLC and a very popular delivery mechanism in continuing ed and online education is Moodle, an open source courseware. So here at MLC we use Moodle quite a bit. I assume that's how most all of those online classes are delivered, right, John?
Yes, we use Moodle for everything. And it seems to serve our needs pretty well. It's flexible. You can arrange your courses in a variety of ways. You can even, it has components where you can do, like a Google Hangout, you can have a face-to-face component, you know, synchronous. But by far the most popular way that people want to have their courses when they're online is asynchronous. You know, the whole purpose of doing online is convenience. It's on my time and it's at my location. So as soon as you take that away from somebody, you say you have to be, even if you're at your location, but you have to be online at a certain time, it takes the magic away. And we get a lot of complaints about that. So we don't actually have a synchronous version very often. Just getting back to your question about Moodle. Moodle has become very popular. It has kind of a funny name. Originally, we started off with Blackboard on this campus, which is a popular higher education product, but it's pretty expensive. And I was at the University of Minnesota, and they had Blackboard. But while I was there, they converted over to Moodle. And so even an institution like the University of Minnesota uses the same type of a course management system that we do here at MLC.
So, John, as you're looking at the success of the program, and it seems to be very desirable just based on the numbers and, again, that asynchronous, you know, convenience, I would assume, however, that there are people who struggle, you know, with that, who aren't those kinds of learners. Has that been your observation, and how do you deal with that? Are they just kind of out of luck since we're kind of moving and we're all in on this online model? What about those people maybe that don't have maybe the construction or makeup to kind of make it in an online world?
That's an interesting question, too. I think the thing that causes people to have difficulty with the online world is not so much the nature of the learning as it is the maybe the familiarity or the comfortability with technology.
Right, right.
So it's not so much the format as it is being able to get online, put in your password, you know, find your course, figure out where to submit your assignment. Those types of things for some people can be difficult and be quite time-consuming. And when those get in the way, that's when we see people that maybe drop out of a course. But those are rare. Before anybody takes a course, an online course, we have an orientation that they have to go through. And that orientation leads them through how do you get onto Moodle, how do you work through a typical lesson. And by the time they get done with that, they usually feel pretty confident. So getting back to the, you know, are there people who say, I prefer a face-to-face format? Absolutely. But when I do a lot of surveys of people, and when I ask people the question that I did this past summer, I asked our Wells teachers K-12, how do you feel about online learning? And on a scale of 1 to 5, they're pretty much always around the 3 to 4 range. And I've done a scale on a 1 to 10, and it's around, you know, the 7 to 8 range. People are pretty positive about it, generally. That's where most people sit. So it's just, I getting back to your question of who, what do you do for people who don't like the online environment? There's not much that we can do for them except offer satellite courses.
Sure. I think, probably, John, you've probably taken online classes. I know I have personally, Martin. I know you have as well. I think once you get past that technology hurdle, for me, the bigger hurdle is the self-motivation. That, you know, there's not a regular class schedule. You've got to get in there and be motivated enough to meet your deadlines to do the work without having as much check-in and things like that as you would have if it were a face-to-face class. So, you know, it does take a certain type of person that has a little bit of motivation to do these kind of things as well.
Now, if I could just follow up with that, I don't know what kind of courses you've had, but when we structure our courses here, they involve a lot of interactivity. Mm-hmm. So it's not a kind of a go-on-your-own-pace type of a course. We just don't offer those kind. There are regular assignments that you do each week. You have to check in. You have to post things and get responses from other people. So there's that constant communication. You can maybe check out for a couple of days, but if you would check out for a week, you would find yourself having a hard time catching up.
Good point. And I guess we should kind of bring out the main tools that you use in an online class. And one that you're referencing probably is that discussion threaded discussion board forum, that kind of thing, that threaded discussion. And so, yes, definitely you could structure your assignments that they have to post on the discussion board and comment on other people's and things like that. So definitely that. Oftentimes with online courses, there's also online quizzing. Perhaps videos that you can embed, and certainly other mechanisms for delivering the course content. And so pretty typical components that people have to interact with in an online course. Mm-hmm. So I guess we could then jump into kind of specific course offerings, and we definitely wanted to feature the MLC course offerings that are out there. I actually have the Graduate Studies and Continuing Ed website up, so you certainly can come to the MLC site and learn more. It's segmented by Graduate Studies versus Continuing Ed. There's also areas for certificates and licensure and new teacher induction. Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about how they would find things on the site, John?
Thanks. When you come to the MLC homepage, and can I ask you, Sally, just to click on the emblem up there?
Sure.
There are two ways to access the Continuing Education Graduate Studies portion of the website. The easiest way is to the left of the picture under the Just For You. There's a link that Sally's on right now where it says Graduate Studies and Continuing Ed. And if you click on that, that takes you directly to our section, and there you see the various things that are offered through my office, from a graduate degree program up in blue at the top to all the continuing education offerings. The red is the certificates or the licensures that we have, and then finally new teacher induction is something we just added last year. But if you want to know what courses are being offered this particular fall, if you go to the green continuing ed section, and you'll see at the top it says course information, and then you can there are some links under there. It shows the fall schedule. It shows the spring schedule, and we are currently taking registrations for the spring schedule.
Okay. Very good. And that's the continuing ed. Is that going to cover all the courses that are part of graduate studies as well?
Mm-hmm. That can, yep.
It's all there.
So if you click on that, you'll notice that they're segmented into different categories. Each one of those titles, you can drop down and see what courses are being offered in each one of those categories. And our courses will range from webinars, which are... basically, it's something that is for $20. You watch an instructional video that's been put together by one of our either our on-campus or adjunct instructors, and then you follow up with some sort of an assignment to reflect on what you learned and what you might put into practice. And And when you submit your assignment, then you receive 4 clock hours for that. So that's kind of an easy way to get comfortable or familiar with a particular topic that you might be interested in. You're never going to become an expert at it through a webinar, but you'll certainly become more familiar with and more knowledgeable about that topic. We have also something I'd like to highlight, the Teaching That Works series, if you could open that one up. The Teaching That Works series is a series of courses, online courses, that are revolve around the way the professional development says that we learn best. And I think I'm seeing Martin as my main person right now. I don't know if we've lost the computer screen, Sally.
No, it's still good, John.
Okay, all right. Just showing that we have 3 courses right now. They're 1-credit courses. They're spread over 5 weeks. There are 4 components. The first one is you learn about the theory, and you talk about it with the people in your class. By talking, we mean asynchronous discussion. And make sure you understand it. You see the practice modeled. You get a chance to make a plan to put it into your own classroom. You teach it, and you get feedback from your peers and from your instructor to help you to better hone what you're doing. And the people who participate in this are very positive about the results. They feel like they have taken this one segment of instruction and actually they can put it into practice with confidence in their classroom.
Excellent. And those are typically 1-credit hour.
Those are 1 credit, so they're short. They're 5 weeks long. They're inexpensive because they're only 1 credit. They seem to work pretty well.
Like hands-on, real good stuff to learn, huh?
I think one thing that I enjoy about at least teaching as an adjunct at an MLC course every summer is the just kind of watching the interaction between students, which I think is a little bit more dynamic even than maybe in a classroom where they're applying. Most of the people obviously that are taking these courses are in the field, you know, and doing continuing ed, so they have life experience. But they're relating that life experience and then asking real relevant questions. So it's not just this preparation, someday I'll be doing this thing. It's I'm doing this now and I really struggle with this. Help me figure this out, you know, before the next school year starts. And I think that's a real advantage of this kind of thing, where you can bring all kinds of shapes and sizes of people and experiences and really learn as much from each other as you can from the instructor.
Mm-hmm. And you bring up a good point that when you're in an online course, there's a different dynamic that happens than when you're in a face-to-face course. If you're in a face-to-face course with, let's say, 10 other people, the instructor will be telling you some things, and you might have 1 or 2 people in that classroom that participate that might even dominate the discussion. When you're in an online format, everybody gets on an equal playing field where everybody has to contribute, and the instructor gets to see what everybody is thinking and respond to what everybody is saying. And it's impossible to dominate, have one person dominate the conversation, because if a person tries to write a really long post, nobody reads it.
Right. Yeah, it does absolutely force you to think through the conversation and you know, try and crystallize it. It's a writing assignment every time you kind of get online, which is actually a good thing. So, great. Yeah.
Very good. I just want to make quick mention, and I don't have my screen shared anymore. Let's see if I can find my mouse, that Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary has a site, Grow in Grace, where they offer online courses as well in the continuing ed vein. So you can come to WLSCE.net and look at courses and things that are available there. They also have their spring and summer quarter schedules online already, and they do some face-to-face offerings as well. I think they might even be doing some on MLC's campus from the seminary. So they use Moodle as well. So if you're familiar with Moodle from MLC, then you're going to feel real comfortable jumping in on a seminary online course as well. And that's all through the Grow in Grace website. Yep. Martin, I brought up our Wells.net University site. Maybe people want to learn some things that aren't really for credit or whatever, but we do have a Moodle site that we operate through Wells where we have things like online Bible study resources, and you can take online quizzes and things around those. We have resources on parenting and resources for Sunday school teachers. So if you have, if you're a Sunday school teacher superintendent or something and are looking for some online resources to bring your staff up to speed or whatever, there's things like that on our Wells.net University site as well.
Yep. I guess before we leave this topic, John and Sally, I think there are a lot of resources out there, and sometimes it's difficult to wade through that. If you're not drawn to something at one of our synod schools, there are obviously many other kinds of resources, online resources out there, from technical to theological and so on and so forth. One thing that I have found real helpful in trying to navigate those waters is to begin to develop what we've talked about in the past, a PLN, a personal learning network, just a network of people that you can bounce things off of, get ideas from, and also get kind of reviews from if you're interested in exploring a different area, whether that be a certain discipline in the classroom or whatever it is. It's really helpful to talk to other people who've kind of gone down that road, and to begin to build those PLNs is easier and easier with things like Twitter and some other tools that are out there that would allow you to connect with like-minded people. So if you're a middle grade teacher that kind of departmentalizes on, you know, history and science or whatever, there are groups out there, large groups out there that really specialize in that. Some of them are secular, some of them are religious. But you just have to do a little bit of hunting around and then get connected. And the social networks that we have today are really, really helpful in trying to both connect people so they can share ideas, but also share experiences.
Yeah, I have an article that I'll throw a link to in the show notes. It's called How Do I Get a PLN? And it walks you through and explains the things that Martin was just talking about and how helpful they can be, and gives you some practical steps for building your own personal learning network. And I'm sure, Martin, you didn't mention this, but a great resource for teachers that you don't want to overlook is Pinterest, because there's plenty to be shared.
I did overlook that.
John, I bet you do Pinterest and love it, right?
You know, I have a Pinterest account, and I don't think I've ever actually used it for anything.
You and Martin are teaming up against
sorry.
Me.
I'm sorry. But I'm actually, sorry. What Martin
it just reinforces my point, John. That's okay.
What Martin said about the peer learning is so important. Research would show that the near peer is a great resource for learning. You know, sometimes if I'm a fifth grade teacher, and if I talk to maybe the sixth grade teacher in my school or the fourth grade teacher, we all kind of have the same mindset or think about a given topic. But if I talk to a fifth grade teacher in another school or a fifth grade teacher in the public school, they might look at something from a different perspective, and it helps to open up my ideas and give me new ideas. That the idea of the near peer is just a valuable way to learn and grow as a person.
Increase your perspective, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Broaden your horizons. Mm-hmm. John, we really appreciate you taking some time with us this afternoon to talk about online learning. Blessings on the school year that you're in and your continuing work to get people into these very valuable programs. So we'll be sure to emphasize these in our show notes. And once again, thanks for taking the time with us.
Sure. Thank you for having me here. If there's one more thing, do I have time for one more thing?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. I want to make sure that we don't leave this conversation with... sometimes people think about online learning or the internet as being something fast and easy. And what I've found is that you never really accomplish much if you try the fast and easy route. The best online learning is that which is usually more intensive, a little bit, it's ongoing. That's when you're going to learn and grow the most. So you kind of get what you pay for. If you go with the fast and easy, you're probably going to not get much out of it.
No shortcuts. There's convenience, which I think is what online learning provides. But again, it's a roll up your sleeves and apply, you know, apply the gifts that God has given you. So, good point.
Great.
Thanks, John. So appreciate it. Enjoy your Tuesday.
All right. Bye.
Bye bye.
Good conversation, Sally. I think there are. We'll have a lot of other notes here in the show notes related to online learning. But really, the point of the show is there are resources out there, and anybody who is motivated to learn in whatever discipline, there are online resources out there.
Yep, lots to learn and lots of opportunities.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our next segment, which is ministry resources. And I ran across something that I wanted to share with everybody. So let me do that here. And that is from the website Church Mag. We refer to it fairly often, and with good reason. They've got some good resources there. Ran across an article from Eric Dye. It says, Do Saturday emails increase church attendance? And this is not something I'd really thought about, but they put together an infographic after surveying 81 churches, and they kind of put the results in a little infographic about what their findings were. Some things like 57% of participating churches increase in attendance from the week before based on sending out an email for the first time. 13% average week-over-week attendance boost in churches who saw an increase. So they're just talking about a little bit of the things that churches that endeavored in this area. They talked a little bit about what kinds of emails they would send. 40% of all email opens happen on mobile phones, so something to keep in mind. Just some good information about this particular topic, and I think it's just good to raise that you have a communications channel, the ability to take information to your people if you have their emails, and you do it strategically. So is the Saturday email a good way to do it? Are smaller emails throughout the week the way to go? Maybe you just haven't even thought about using it to prep people for that big event on Sunday morning that happens each and every week. So just a little bit of info, a little bit of an infographic that we thought we'd share that might be helpful in your thinking about your internal communications.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, having a communication plan in place and thinking through some of those things. I bet there are plenty of people out there that are watching or listening right now that think, my emails go out as soon as I finally get them typed up and I press send, you know. But if you use some tools, you can do some scheduling. For instance, maybe you're sending out emails using MailChimp or whatever. Well, you can schedule the date and time that you want that email to be delivered. And I know in our former congregations, we'd get our MailChimp e-newsletter for the church every Saturday morning. So that timing, you know, did promote, I think, the church attendance and stuff. So
one thing the article did say is that specifically about Saturday, is that Saturday is a very low mail day, mm-hmm. but a good open day, so that as people have time to kind of get through their personal email, that's a time when a lot of emails do get opened, but they don't have a lot of emails coming into the system. So that's just something to keep in mind. So maybe Saturday is a nice sweet spot for some folks. So
excellent.
Shall we move on to our news and tech?
We have some news and tech just hot off the press. As of this morning at 10 a.m., our friends over at CNET reported that Facebook has a brand new app. It's an app for their groups function, which I know many of our listeners use groups for their congregation or school sites on Facebook. I take that back. They might use pages more, but groups more for affinity groups, like a mom's group or a youth group page or whatever it might be. You can privatize groups. There's a lot of advantages to using groups to connect people. And what they've done is they've taken and broken out groups into a separate mobile app. You guys may be remember that not too long ago they broke out their Messenger service. And so if you use the Facebook mobile app, you can't get your chat messages unless you have a separate app for Messenger. Well, Groups, they're handling a little differently. It's going to be a separate app, but it's still going to be integrated. You can do it in the Facebook app, or you can use the Groups app to get to your group information. It maybe is going to give you a cleaner slate, so if you want to focus on your groups, you could go into that app and, you know, see feeds from each of your groups and that kind of thing. But it seems like there's a trend. The article goes into this a little. I know Google has segmented almost all of their different tools. There's apps just for Google Docs, for instance. There's an app for Drive, but you can also get standalone apps for the different different software components of Drive. And it just seems like a lot of companies are going to that model where they break apart their tools.
Yep. And Facebook has long since recognized that mobile is an audience that really needs to be a priority, and that's why they're producing these separate apps. So that's good to see. So it'll be interesting to see what it does. And if you're not using Facebook groups, I think there are many applications in the life of a church group to make use of that particular technology, because it does privatize Facebook, so to speak. If you have a prayer group or a little Bible study group or something that you want to restrict the membership on, which Facebook is a little bit too open for, groups are a good way to do that. So.
Yep. Trade-off there. The people have to have Facebook accounts to make use of it.
Yep.
But, you know, in this day and age, being all things to all people to spread the good news, you can't be focused on the fact that not everybody has it. You can address some people that way. You can address others with other tools or communication channels. But definitely a great tool to keep in the playbook.
Very good. Let's move on to our tips or picks of the week.
I have a learning pick of the week that I want to share in light of our recent discussion. This is a mobile app called Elevate, and it's for brain training. So you can get it for free from the iTunes store. I'm guessing they're probably on Android as well. I didn't check. But I have it on my iPhone, and each day you can play 3 brain training oriented games. They're very high quality, some of them, and it mixes it up. You don't get to choose which games it gives you for the day, but it gives you a mix, and over time you can build towards higher scores in the different games and things like that. Some of them require you to listen to something and answer questions about it, or some are grammar oriented, some are math oriented, just a real variety of games, just real high quality games that you have available to play on the device. And like I said, over time you can work towards higher scores and things. So I've enjoyed Elevate. It'll remind me to train my brain each day, but if I want to play it unlimited, basically I can buy a month's worth of access for $5 a month. Haven't spent the money on that. Don't know that I ever will, because I'm all about freebies, but even just doing it once a day, if I remember to do it that often, is a good little timeout for me to give my brain a workout. So check out Elevate for brain training.
Yeah, there are a lot of those types of apps. I've been playing around with a few of them as well. Lumosity. Same kind of deal. I don't know if they get many people to bite on the monthly thing, but if you get hooked on it, maybe they do, because sometimes it amounts to, you know, $10 a month even to get new games in there. But they say, and science I think backs us up, that these kinds of things are very healthy for you, and to, you know, keep that brain active and keep those synapses firing, stave off issues, Alzheimer's, memory issues later in life.
That's right.
So, yeah,
good
stuff. I probably need those. My pick of the week is a hardware pick, and it is something that probably everybody on this show, watching this show, has heard of, and that is the little mobile device called the iPhone. I think I've had the iPhone as a pick before. The iPhone 6 was launched maybe 2 months ago, something like that. The big deal, so to speak, about iPhone 6 and 6 Plus is that they're bigger. So they've stretched it out a little bit. So now they come in 2 sizes. One is a 4.7-inch screen and a 5.5-inch screen. These, and I've been using an iPhone here for the last couple of weeks. I've been doing some mobile app testing with it, and have really been impressed with this version of the iPhone. They say it's their thinnest and lightest, but also largest, so they've been able to skinny it down but still make the screen bigger. The design is nice. It's nice and sleek. The display is beautiful as always. It's got a fingerprint reader on it so that you really don't have to type in a passcode. You just put your thumbprint or your fingerprint on there. The camera has been improved. My primary criteria for a camera, however, has always been battery life. And I think I, in general, prefer Android, but I have not found a single Android phone that will match the battery life of an iPhone or the camera either. So those are too big, although they don't do a lot of camera work with a camera phone. But battery life is just almost two times greater than any other Android phone that I've tried or tested or read about. So that's a big deal. So you've got my lights are going off here, Sally.
The party's over.
Party's over. We must have to wrap this thing up. but I can get a day and a half or even two out of a single charge on the iPhone. And that's really a requirement, especially some of the traveling that I do. It's real helpful to have that that staying power. And I have the regular iPhone 6. The 4.7-inch screen just fits nicely in my hand. I don't have real big hands. So the 6 Plus is definitely out of the question, but the 4.7-inch screen I can navigate around with still pretty much with one hand. And I think it's well worth the price. You know, all the Apple products are not cheap, but you also get what you pay for. And, of course, the ecosystem, as you mentioned, with your app pick, is it's really unequaled. I think it's still better than the Android market as well. So lots of good stuff going on for the iPhone, and the iPhone 6 seems like a very worthy purchase for somebody in the market for a smartphone.
I'm glad you've come back to the good side of things. I'm the iPhone fan here, and you've been off on a tangent with your Android devices. So good to hear that you're back.
It's all about that
Apple
battery
fan.
Life. So
awesome.
All right, let's move on to Wells Insider.
Sure. A couple of things I want to make mention of. First of all, we heard from our friend Cindy Krieger, who's over in Lansing, Michigan, I believe, and she was searching online for online worship opportunities. She said her dad's health is failing, and it's great to have, you know, DVDs from their congregation or online opportunities for worship since he can't always make it to church on Sunday. And just a quick reminder that we have a page on our Wells Tech Wiki. I actually have it up here, so I'll show it to you, where we have all kinds of online worship resources. So you can watch archived audio and video, or you can tune in to live stream services, and we have links to all of those on our Wells Tech Wiki. So check that out if you're looking for an online worship opportunity. Also want to make mention that we're asking our Wells members to consider donating their older iPhones. Perhaps you just bought an iPhone 6 and you have an iPhone 4 that's just sitting around collecting dust. Well, folks in Malawi would love to make use of your iPhone 4. These would be either from AT&T or T-Mobile or what's the term? GSM Unlocked. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we can collect those. There's a web page that we'll direct you to from our show notes site where you can mail those into the technology office and we will get them to Malawi. Interestingly, we heard from Pastor Emil Burgess on this very topic. Martin, I don't know if you picked up on this message, but he watched our show last week and sent us a message, said, regarding the iPhone donations to missions, is there a need for iPhone 4 or 4S power cords? We have the wrong carriers to donate a phone, but would maybe in the future have the cords to share?
I think that would be useful as well. I think the phones are for our national pastors over there in Malawi. It's just a better way to communicate than traditional computers or emails. So I think anything, any attachments, so to speak, accessories would be good.
Excellent. Good to know. And just a shout out to Pastor Burgess. He was the winner of HymnSoft Player 3.0 in our recent giveaway, and he wrote to express his thanks for that as well. So.
And thank you, Emil, for sending the offer back, and also for participating in the survey, as well as all the other pastors who did so. Let's move on to our need to know section. A couple things on the calendar we want to remind people of. Final Web for Dummies. Sally's going to be at the helm, driving a 3-day Final Web for Dummies class, January 21st to 23rd, bit.ly/FW training info.
Yep, and we heard from another Wells Tech listener, Walter Bubi, B-U-B-I-E.
Buble? Oh, no, it's an I, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I might have spelled Bubier? It wrong. There you go. He is from Prince of Peace in Fairport, New York. And at the end of his message, Martin, he said, thank you for all your work in the ministry of Christ and the Word. I'm an avid listener of your podcast with Martin Spriggs. You make it sound like lots of fun. So there you go. Thanks
for
writing.
It is lots of fun, don't you think so?
You have a good time. He's interested in the Final Web training. He was asking some questions about whether it would be archived and, you know, if he couldn't make it to all 3 days and that kind of thing. It is a live, real-time offering, and at this point, we didn't have plans to record that, but, you know, that's something we might consider. So
it is online, by the way, and there is limited seats available since we're using Google Hangouts. I'm assuming all the three classes still have available seats, Sally?
They do at this point, yes.
Okay, so hurry up and get on the list and enjoy some good Final Web training. And if you haven't looked at your Final Web installation lately, it's probably changed, and you will probably need this class because it's changed significantly. So get on board. And it's cheap, $29. Isn't it $29 per?
No, sir.
$49 per.
$49 a day.
$129 for all three, yes.
You had a 29 in there.
I knew there was a 29.
Yeah. One more thing for your calendar, and that's the upcoming Wells Tech Conference 2015. It will be offered July 9th through 11th from Country Springs Hotel and Conference Center in Waukesha, Milwaukee area, Wisconsin. So we have a webpage up for that conference. You can learn more about the schedule and the keynote speakers and things like that. And you can also sign up to get updates as we prepare to release the registration in February. So head on over to wells.net/wellstechconf to learn more about that event.
Another way to stay up to date with both the conference and our show is to follow us on Twitter at WellsTech. So that's a great way to stay tuned in to all the things going on with WellsTech.
All right. We have a little community feedback. First up, we heard from Pastor Rob Gunther. We've talked before with Rob about his self-publishing efforts, where he put together a series of his sermons into an ebook format and put it out on Amazon. And Rob wrote to us this week because he had decided to use a free time period to give away the sermons for a period of time, and surprisingly got amazing results from the giveaway. I think in the end, in this 1-week time period or 5-day time period where he gave away the ebook, he had 1,496 downloads, so right at 1,500 downloads of God's Word going out. You know, he said, I couldn't imagine 2,000 people walking into my service to hear God's Word, but here he's, through the power of technology, reached 2,000 people with his sermon series, and we just give God the glory for that. That's wonderful news, Rob, and we're excited by the efforts you put into that.
And if you've listened to our shows in the past where we've talked with Rob about his self-publishing efforts, it's not that hard. Rob has just put in a little bit of dedication. He's already created the content, so it wasn't something that he created specifically for Amazon. So he repurposed some existing sermons that he'd already written. He just found a way to get it on Amazon, did a little promotion, and boy, what a reach God has used Rob's work, and hopefully is touching lives with it. So
absolutely.
So you could do it too.
We heard from longtime listener Perry Lund with a link to a Microsoft Office blogs article.
We haven't heard OneDrive. From Perry in a while.
No, he's teaching out at Evergreen Lutheran High School.
He's probably a little busy.
Busy guy, but we are happy to hear from you, Perry, and thanks for the link. OneDrive is now offers unlimited storage for Office 365 subscribers. So we talked recently about Office 365 and how to get access to that as a nonprofit and the free or very low-cost subscriptions that are available for that tool as nonprofits, and now with unlimited storage. I think they had to catch up with Google on that one, Martin, because Google went unlimited with their Drive, and now OneDrive is unlimited as well.
Yep. Okay.
An article from, and I don't think I have it up. Let me click my link real quick. It was actually a website from Tim Gablehouse, who wrote to us to point us to edx.org, where you can find great online courses from the world's best universities. Thought the timing was perfect with your link. Tim, thank you very much for sharing that. So it's a compilation site where you can see different courses, everything from Harvard to MIT to Rice and UC Berkeley. All kinds of colleges are putting their courses online for free access. And this is just one site that's compiled those. So if you're looking to find a course on a particular topic, check out edx.org. And then finally, a link I shared on the DIGO website, 8 things you didn't know you could do with Google Drive. So just a quick list of Google Drive tips and tricks that maybe you weren't aware of. And it's a Mashable article that came out recently. So read through those and you might find something new that will be a help to you in your use of Google Drive.
Great.
And that's what we have for community feedback, Martin.
Thanks to you, Sally, and thanks to everybody who submitted an entry there. We'd love to hear from you. WellsTech.Wells.net is the website. WellsTech@Wells.net, the email address. We're on DIGO, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Google+. Use a listserv if you like. Lots of good people out there listening and contributing answers to questions that go on out there. So just head on over to the show notes page. Next week, I'm excited, Sally. We're going to be talking about Shop Wells. We're in the Christmas season, so to speak, the giving season, and Shop Wells is all about finding good deals for Wells congregations, schools, and members. We're going to be welcoming Chris Hunt to the show, who is a sales rep, our sales rep for Troxel, which is a great provider of school resources, including Chromebooks. They're a new member of the Shop Wells family, and we're looking forward to talking all about Shop Wells and the different ways it might be helpful to you and or your ministry there. So that's all coming up next week.
We have a special announcement about next week. I realize it's not in the mind map, Martin, but we are podcasting at a different time next week. Right. It will be actually on Monday the 24th at 11 a.m., kind of way different than normal, but with our schedules because of the holiday week, that's what's going to work for us. So we're shifting the podcast to Monday, November 24th at 11 a.m. So tune in then for that ShopWells discussion.
For the live discussion. Yeah, and there are advantages to tuning in live. You can participate in the Q&A that goes on sometimes during our shows. So we'd love to have more people watching live and providing real-time feedback.
Definitely.
Our featured video of the week is from YouTube and very appropriate to our discussion earlier with Dr. Meyer. It is a TED Talk from 2011 by Salman Khan. That name may sound familiar to you. Khan Academy was one of the first notable online learning websites or platforms out there, and it's only grown since then. Salman Khan was the creator of that, and he gives a little talk about online learning and how Khan Academy got its start. So there's a whole series of videos that are related to that, but the one that kind of kicked it off, I think a very good talk, is the TED Talk from 2011.
Yeah.
So tune into that.
He touches on a lot of those things about the differences in learning online, mm-hmm. and the advantages and flipping classrooms and all that kind of stuff. So
yep.
Good talk.
Good deal. All right. That's it for the show this week. Thank you so much for being a part of it. However you're listening or watching, we're happy that you're doing so. Share the fact that this thing, this little podcast goes on each week. We'd love to have more people join the conversation, and we'd love for you to tune in next week. That's it for this week's Wells Tech. Lord's blessings, and talk to you soon.